Chapter 24. 2017 Hours. They hurried out of the porter cabin. The fluorescent lighting had degraded their natural night vision, and Porter struggled to pick out much detail beyond the illuminated patches of ground immediately in front of him. As they moved north, he heard movement. He turned and saw a pair of dark shapes approaching from the direction of the guard hut. Porter stopped in his tracks and reached for his weapon. Tannen and Solomon moved into the reflected glow from the porter cabin window. They stepped tentatively forward from the darkness. Tannen glanced at the cabin, then at the four men in front of her.
"What's going on?" she asked. "Where are the Russians?"
Porter told her about the diamonds they had found.
"We think they're at another compound, on the other side of the mine."
"What's in there that the Russians want?"
Soames sighed irritably.
"We're wasting time. We need to go right this bloody second,"
Tannen said.
"I'll come with you."
Porter shook his head.
"Not until we've taken care of the Russians."
She went to reply, but Soames interrupted her.
"Porter's right for once in his damn life. It's too dangerous. I'm the authority here. If you know what's good for you, young lady, you'll stay put."
Tannen stared pointedly at the ex-Rupert, but didn't respond. Porter dug out the dead sat phone from the back pocket of his combats and handed it to her.
"You want to make yourself useful? Search the buildings for a charger. We need to get the sat phone up and running so we can make contact with our handler. Tell him the Russians have reached the mine and we're going after them."
"Try the accommodation blocks," Tully said. "There's no phone lines in these parts. Most of the guards use sat phones to call home on the job. You should find a charger lying around somewhere."
"What about me?"
Solomon interrupted.
"Guard the entrance," Bald said. "Look out for any approaching enemies. We think the Russians have called for reinforcements."
Solomon nodded eagerly.
"Anything you say, boss."
The man mountain turned and padded towards the front of the compound. At the same time, Tannen made for the concrete buildings opposite the porter cabin. Porter watched them depart. Then he about turned, hurried north past the buildings, and joined Tully, Soames, and Bald by the edge of the mining field.
"This way,"
Tully said. They set off through the mine, following a rough track that ran down from the buildings, for the quick transportation of excavated diamonds, presumably. Tully led the way. Porter and Bald fell into step behind him, with Soames pulling up the rear. The four moved at a brisk pace, picking their way past the open-air bell pits that covered the length and breadth of the field. Mounds of excavated soil were heaped next to each pit. Shallow streams bisected the field, snaking between the piles of loose dirt. There were a few pieces of machinery lying around the field, but most of the work here was done by hand. Hour upon hour, toiling at the earth, sifting through mud and gravel deposits, searching for the stones that would eventually end up in the jewellery shops of Hatton Garden and Fifth Avenue, a process that hadn't changed much in centuries. Every so often, Porter glanced up at the security lights to the north. They were 500 meters from the lights. Was Soames lying when he'd claimed the Russians were after military intelligence? Porter couldn't be sure.
"But whatever is inside that compound, we'll soon find out," he thought.
They pushed on, weaving past the bell pits and the stacks of sifting pans dumped beside each hole. Pools of water glistened in several of the deeper craters, and Porter had to scramble for purchase as he followed Tully along the soft, muddy ground. Tully upped the pace as they drew closer to the security lights, chopping his stride. They were 300 meters from the compound now. Porter could feel his calf muscles burning. A powerful stitch speared his right side. Every muscle in his body ached with tiredness, the years of hard drinking taking its heavy toll. His body screamed at him to rest.
"You made it this far," Porter told himself. "You can't give up now. Keep going. Stop the Russians, and then it'll be over."
They were 150 meters from the compound now. To the north, Porter could see a wide one-story concrete building with a shingle-tiled roof, partially obscured by a line of ironwood trees. A farmhouse, he thought. It looked older than the mine. Perhaps the farm had been here first. Then the geologists had arrived and the mine had opened, but the farmer stubbornly refused to sell, hence the present arrangement. Several outlying structures were situated to the west of the main building, backing onto a densely forested slope. An additional 2-meter-high metal fence surrounded the farmhouse, with a gated entrance visible between the security lights. Porter scanned the area around the house. A pair of torchlights cut through the darkness, moving from the outlying buildings to the farmhouse.
"The Russians," Bald said. "Must be them."
"Looks like they're searching for something," Porter observed. He looked over at Tully and frowned. "What the fuck is this place, Bob?"
"Keep moving," Soames urged.
They hurried on. When they were 100 meters from the fence, Tully tacked to the left and manoeuvred towards the northwest corner of the compound, avoiding the stark glare of the security lights arranged along the perimeter. Porter understood now why they couldn't make a frontal approach to the compound. There were no dark areas they could use to sneak forward. All the security lights at the front of the compound were in perfect working order, unlike the lights guarding the approach to the mine itself, thought Porter, which made him wonder, why is this place better protected than the diamond mine? Tully hit the northwestern corner and stopped. Porter halted alongside him. A gentle slope led down to a deep drainage channel that backed directly onto the perimeter fence. There was about an inch of standing water at the bottom of the ditch. The ground this side of the fence was slightly downhill from the compound, Porter realized, which made it a natural flow point for excess water. The ditch extended south for half a mile from the edge of the compound, emptying out into the river west of the mining field. At the mouth of the channel was a water flow outlet mounted on a concrete base with a metal grating fastened across the opening. The outlet looked just about wide enough for someone to crawl through. Large rocks and logs had been piled high on the slopes either side of the outlet, to prevent soil erosion, probably. On the far side of the perimeter fence, Porter spied a manhole cover 20 meters west of the farmhouse. The outlet tunnel led underground from the ditch up to the manhole cover on the opposite side of the fence. From the manhole to the bottom of the drainage ditch was a drop of about 6 feet, he estimated. Tully picked his way down the slope and waded towards the outlet, motioning for the others to follow. Porter and Bald dropped down into the ditch, with Soames awkwardly lowering himself into the channel after them. All four waited for a moment beside the outlet, stilling their breath and listening for movement on the far side of the fence. Above the trickle of water, Porter heard a pair of faint voices, like tuning into a radio station at the edge of the signal range. They sounded guttural, harsh, foreign. The Russians. 5 seconds passed. The voices faded. Porter and the others waited another 10 seconds in case the Russians returned. Then Bald grabbed hold of the metal grate and tried wrenching it open. The grate rattled. Tully set down his pistol, stepped forward, and grabbed the other end. The two of them tried again.
"No good," Bald muttered. "Bastards fastened tight."
Porter reached for a log from the pile of rocks and timber to the left of the outlet. The tip of the log was splintered from where the other end had broken off. He shoved the split end of the log into the narrow gap between the outlet mouth and the grating. Then he started prising the grate open, using the timber as a lever. The metal resisted at first, groaning on its hinges.
"Hurry, man!"
Soames hissed, his voice straining with anxiety. Porter pushed harder against the log. The grating buckled but held firm. Porter dug his heels into the slippery ground and leaned in, applying his full weight to the log. There was a pause, and then the grate sprang loose from the outlet mouth and clattered to the rocks piled up against the concrete base. Porter froze. He listened and waited to see if the noise had alerted the Russians on the other side of the fence. He heard nothing. After several moments, he stepped back from the tunnel and nodded at Soames.
"Wait here. Don't fucking move."
Then he turned to Bald and gestured to the outlet.
"Ladies first, Jock."
"Fuck off," Bald whispered.
He dropped to his elbows and knees and crawled into the drainage tunnel, clutching his AK-47 close to his chest. Porter went second, then Tully. It was darker than night inside the tunnel. A dense, solid blackness that made it impossible to see more than 2 inches in front of his face. Dank water slicked along the bottom, and there was a putrid smell in the air that made Porter want to gag. He crept on behind Bald, his elbows grazing against the sides of the tunnel. The pipe extended horizontally for 8 meters and stopped directly beneath the manhole cover on the far side of the fence. A shaft of artificial light pierced the darkness through a gap in the manhole. Ahead of him, Bald stooped low beneath the cover. He placed both palms on the underside of the manhole and pushed up. There was a dull scraping noise as the cover lifted, then slid across. Then Bald stood fully upright, spread his arms up through the opening, and hoisted himself out of the drainage tunnel. Porter waited for a couple of beats while Bald checked the surrounding area. He had emerged 5 meters north of the fence and 20 west of the farmhouse. When he was sure the coast was clear, Bald signalled down to Porter. The latter climbed out of the opening and joined his mucker next to a dense thicket of bushes. A few moments later, Tully crawled out of the drainage tunnel and crouched down beside the two operators. Then Porter crept forward and looked out across the compound. The farmhouse was set back at the end of a wide yard. There was a generator shed to the left of the building, with a small timber-framed structure further west, at Porter's 12 o'clock. What looked like some sort of shed. Further back, to the rear of the property, Porter could just about see a one-story concrete annex to the farmhouse, another larger outlying building to the left of it. In front of the farmhouse, there was a playground, fitted out with brand-new equipment. There was a wooden climbing frame with a plastic green slide attached, a metal swing set, and a seesaw, a swing ball to the right with a couple of bats lying next to the pole, five-a-side football pitch to the left next to a wooden clubhouse, a sandbox. Everything looked immaculate. The grass was freshly clipped, the toy dolls neatly arranged in colourful boxes. The lines on the football pitch looked freshly painted. A light beamed in one of the windows at the front of the building. There was a sign fixed to the front of the building that said, Kono Orphan Project.
Not a farmhouse, Porter realized. An orphanage. Who the fuck builds an orphanage right next to a mine? Bald whispered.
Tully said nothing. Porter scanned the compound again. Above the whir of the generator, he heard two voices, the Russians, coming from inside the shed at their 12 o'clock, 20 meters away. Porter observed the shed for a few moments. He caught the flicker of torchlight slanting across the window. The Russians sounded angry, he thought, as if they were shouting at one another. He heard the distinct crash and clatter of equipment inside the shed.
They're tearing the place up, Porter realized. They're definitely looking for something. Something more valuable than a safe load of rough diamonds.
He turned to Tully and lowered his voice.
What's in there?
Nothing, fella, Tully said. Just a storage facility.
Porter nodded.
Wait here. Me and Jock will drop those fuckers while they're still inside. Cover us.
Roger that, fellas.
Porter said,
Let's move, Jock.
They crept forward across the open ground, advancing cautiously towards the storage shed directly ahead of them, parallel to the farmhouse. Porter trapped his breath in his throat and pushed the fire selector up to the middle setting, full auto. He kept his weapon raised, the heel of the AK-47's mahogany stock tucked against the pocket of his right shoulder. Bald moved forward at his 3 o'clock. The Russians were still talking with raised voices inside the shed.
Whatever they're looking for, they haven't found it yet, Porter thought.
He edged closer. They were 15 meters from the shed door, now 14 meters. 13. The crashing noises suddenly stopped. So did the voices. The door flew open. Spraytan stepped outside first. Nealis was a step behind him. Both men were gripping their SLR assault rifles. Spraytan clutched a maglite torch in his left hand. Nealis was holding a satellite phone, similar to the one that Porter and Bald had been given. They were both following the arc of the torch beams as they moved outside the shed and pivoted towards the rear of the compound. The maglite killed their natural night vision, which meant they didn't see Porter and Bald 12 meters to the south. Not until it was too late. Bald dropped to a kneeling stance and fired first. His AK-47 barked twice. 2 rounds thudded into Spraytan's upper back. He jerked wildly as the bullets punched through his body. In the next half-second, Bald fired another 2-round burst at the Russian. The bullets caught him on the half-turn, ripping into his torso. Spraytan grunted and dropped. In the same motion, Nealis spun towards Bald and Porter, firing a 3-round burst in their general direction. 2 bullets missed Porter, zipping past his neck. The third round smashed into his left shoulder. He felt a hot pain explode inside the joint, like someone sinking their teeth into the bone. Neelis shaped to let off another burst. Porter buried the pain, placed the iron sights on Neelis's torso, and depressed the trigger. The muzzle flash lit up the ground, like the flash of a million paparazzi cameras. Two rounds thumped into the Russian's intestines. The third struck lower, nailing him in the groin. Neelis gasped, stumbled backwards, and landed on the ground next to Spraytan, howling in agony as he cupped a hand to his shredded balls. Porter sprinted forward. He stopped in front of Neelis, pointed the AK-47 at the Russian's forehead. Neelis looked up at him, eyes blinking, his teeth stained with blood. The guy was a fucking mess. His belly was stitched with bullets. Blood stained his safari shorts, slicking out of the gaps between his fingers. His eyes focused on the black mouth of the AK-47. He started shaking his head at Porter.
"No," he gasped. "Don't."
Porter fired twice, blasting the Russian at point-blank range. Neelis flinched as the rounds pulverized his skull. Then he went still. "Fuck him," thought Porter. "It's over." Bald moved forward and nodded at Porter's shoulder. "You're fucking bleeding." "Just a flesh wound," Porter replied, grinning through the pain. "Nothing a dressing and a few painkillers won't sort out." He clamped a hand to his shoulder and pointed to the bodies. "Grab his sat phone. We can call it into Hawkridge." Bald reached down and picked up the unit Neelis had dropped. It was a Russian-manufactured military handset, bigger than the slick Motorola device they had been using. A smaller display flashed up a line of Cyrillic characters. Porter stood up, shoved the phone in his back pocket. Then he heard the moaning. It came from the east. Porter hadn't heard the noise before. He had been concentrating fully on the Russians, the din they'd been making as they turned the storage shed upside down, the constant whir of the generator in the background. But now, in the still quiet of the dark, he heard the moan clearly. He looked across his right shoulder towards the source of the sound. It was coming from the direction of the orphanage, from inside the main building, Porter realized. Bald heard it too. He frowned. "The fuck is that?" Porter didn't reply. He gave his back to the dead Russians and beat a quick path towards the orphanage on the eastern side of the compound. In the periphery of his vision, he saw Tully hurrying over to the open manhole to help Soames climb out of the drainage tunnel. Porter ignored them and moved across the playground, Bald hurrying after him. "I don't know what the Russians were after, but it's got something to do with whatever is lurking on the other side of that door," thought Porter. "I'm going to find out what it is." The moaning sound grew louder as they approached the front porch. From the outside, the orphanage looked well-maintained. The salmon-coloured paint on the walls was spotless. The shingled tiles on the roof showed no signs of wear or tear. Probably run on a generous budget, Porter figured. Maybe the orphanage was funded by the diamond mine owners. Maybe that was a condition for doing business in a shithole like Sierra Leone. You could take whatever you liked out of the earth, so long as you fronted the cash for an orphanage or two. He stepped up onto the sun-bleached planking and approached the front door. Then Porter stopped again. He could hear the diesel engine burr of the generator, the sound of his own breathing, the sound of the child moaning. It was definitely coming from the other side of that door. He reached down and tested the handle. Locked. Porter took two steps back and shaped to take a run at the door. Bald maneuvered to the left, his AK-47 pointed at the entryway, ready to neutralize any threat that might be waiting on the far side. Then Porter strode forward and kicked the door in, slamming the heel of his boot into the midsection. The door crashed inward and bounced back off the inside wall. Porter spread his palms, stopping the door from rebounding shut. He stood in the entrance for a moment, searching for any movement or threat. Nothing. Then he stepped inside.